Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Grace Commission and the Figge report on the national debt right after this message. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, who was the former editor of the New York Tribune. Here's what he said to the New York Press Association on February 26, 1936. He said, "There's no such thing as a free and independent press in America unless it's in some country town. And there's not one of you who dares to express an honest opinion because you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid $150 a week," he said, "for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with. Now, others of you are paid for doing similar things. And if I should permit my honest opinions to be printed in one issue of my paper like Othello before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Our business is to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his race and his country for his daily bread. We are the tools of rich men behind the scenes. We are intellectual prostitutes." Unquote. Well, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program in the New World Order, men and families like the Windsors, the Rockefellers, Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time for us to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this new world order and Global 2000 insanity. If you'd like to learn more about Global 2000 and its connection with Bible prophecy and the new world order, why don't you call and order my four-hour compact disc package. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? That's georgegordon.org. Or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about the decline of the dollar. Is it an accident that the dollar is in deep trouble? Is it a surprise? Is it something that just came upon us and we're just totally overwhelmed by it? Just totally surprised. Never suspected such a thing was about to occur. I reported to you early on that the Figge Company, actually it's called Figge International, you can get a copy of this little booklet, I'm sure, from the Public Affairs Department. They're located at 4420 Sherwin Road in Willoughby, Ohio. And that's spelled W-I-L-L-O-U-G-H-B-Y. Willoughby, Ohio. The zip code is 44094. They've got a phone number. It's 216-953-2811. That's area code 216-953-2811. For more information, that's contact the Figge International Public Affairs Department, 4420 Sherwin Road, Willoughby, Ohio, 44094. That number again, 216-953-2811. I'm going to give you a couple of more excerpts out of the book. Now, I read the entire little booklet. It's only 12 pages long. It's put out by a fellow named Harry E. Figge, Jr. Remember that story? Harry was giving a speech about 1990. He was reporting on his experience with the Grace Commission, that he had been hired along with 500 other employees and $77 million of private money, private corporate funding, plus government funding. And their job was to figure out, do a model and figure out what's going to happen if we keep overspending at the federal level. If we keep running budget deficits of 100 to 150 billion a year, what's going to happen? What's the end result? What's the solution to the problem? And they came up with a solution to the problem. They found $424 billion in savings. President Reagan said, "That's enough. We don't want to know anymore." Then they went out and they had a little conversation with Dick Armey. Now, listen to the story here. "This past Tuesday, I met with several congressmen on the subject, including Congressman Dennis Eckert from Cleveland and Congressman Dick Armey from Texas. I showed six different congressmen the debt and deficit projections for the next few years, and every one of them said, 'Gee, I didn't know it was that bad.'" Let me pause right there and make an observation. Here are congressmen in the Congress of the United States. This businessman walks in and says, "Let me tell you what's going on with the national debt. Let me tell you what's going on with the budget deficits. Let me show you what our projections are." Dick Armey. Now, Armey is an economics professor with degrees after his name, you know, with letters. Dick Armey, professor, PhD, pile higher and deeper. And he says, gee, Harry, you ruined my day. I'm really surprised. I didn't know that. Do you, honest to God, do you believe that an economics professor didn't know that there was a problem with these budget deficits? I mean, you know, I'm just a crummy plumber, and I can see that there's a problem with it. I can see there's a problem with deficit spending and deficit financing from my personal experience. I had 28 credit cards one time, and I maxed them all out. You know, I was young and dumb. I was probably 30, 35 years old, somewhere in there. I say young and dumb. If you're 30 to 35, you probably think you're pretty damn smart. So did I. But when I maxed out all those credit cards and owed 12,000 bucks. Now listen, back in 1970, when you were making 12,000 bucks, you were on top of the world. You were above the national average. I mean, you know, you had arrived. I'm making 12 grand a year. I've arrived. And all of a sudden, I've maxed my credit cards out and I can't make ends meet. That's what taught me a lesson about deficit financing. You know, I bought into the same argument that everybody else did. You know, the world owes me a living and I'd be out there collecting the receivables. Well, listen, Dick Armey says, gosh, I'm just really surprised. I didn't know that. You're sitting in the Congress of the United States and you're surprised you're voting on these bills. Well, one of two things comes right to my mind. It's either number one, these guys are fools and ought not to be in the Congress to start with. Or number two, they're not fools and they know full well what they're doing, which tells me then that they've got a game plan that they're working on. Game plan. Now, you remember that the Bush administration this year enacted a drug bill for seniors, but you can't use bulk purchases to work the price down, and you can't buy these drugs out of the country. See, you can go to Canada and buy these same drugs for half price. And they said, gee, we don't know if we want to buy them from Canada. They might not be good quality. Hang on here a minute, folks. Do you, honest to God, do you believe that the Canadians, when the Canadian drug companies like Pfizer, Canada, is turning out drugs that are inferior to drugs turned out in Cleveland or Philadelphia? Come on now, folks. Honest to God, do you believe that crap? That's what they're telling us. Well, this Dick Armey over here was the guy that snuck this little paragraph into the bill that said that if a pharmaceutical company puts out a product that kills people, you can't sue them. Do you think that Dick Armey put that in there accidentally? He didn't know what he was doing. It was a mistake. He was having an epileptic seizure, and he put it in there and couldn't remember a thing. Now, come on, boys and girls. What you have here in the Congress are very knowledgeable people, people with PhDs, people with letters after their names, intelligent people. They're not doing this accidentally. They know full well what they're doing. The destruction of the American economy that you're witnessing today is part of a grand overall plan. It's intended to destroy the American economy. What is that going to do to millions of people like you that are in debt up over your eyeballs? What's that going to mean with hyperinflation, unemployment, when we are unable to pay our bills and we go into a banana republic hyperinflation like Bolivia, Argentina, and Brazil? Do you think that's going to cause any economic dislocations in your family, in my family, in millions of families all over America? And indeed, America is 20% of the world's economy. What do you think is going to happen to the Japanese, the Chinese, and everybody else in the world? Do you think this is a part of a grand plan that's being orchestrated? Well, I do. And that's why I'm making this report. So when I read here that this past Tuesday I met with several congressmen on the subject, including Congressman Dennis Eckert from Cleveland and Congressman Dick Armey from Texas, and I showed six different congressmen the debt and deficit projections for the next few years, and every one of them said, gee, I didn't know it was that bad. That's a damn lie. Every one of them knew it was that bad. In fact, they've got better intelligence and better information than figure the Grace Commission would dare to dream of. President Bush isn't ignorant. He knows exactly what he's doing. And yet, when you read these kinds of reports, the people that are writing them, like Harry Figge, is writing the report from the point of view that I went to these six congressmen and they all said to me, gee, I didn't know it was that bad. So the picture that's being painted for you and me down here at the lowest levels, the lowest echelons of Americana, is that our leaders are a bunch of bumbling idiots like the Keystone Cops that don't know whether their hind ends are bored or punched. That isn't true. They know full well what's going on, and they're orchestrating it, and they're doing it intentionally. Now, that's not going to bode well for you and I, so that's why I'm sitting on the Titanic just like all the rest of you people out there, and I'm saying, hey, listen, the captain up there, he knows full well that there's icebergs dead ahead. He's got six messages in his coat pocket. They've already been delivered. He's fully informed. He knows how fast the ship is going. This guy's been a sailor for 39 years. What do you mean he's sailing this ship at 23 knots straight into 5,000 square miles of icebergs in the middle of the night and doesn't know what he's doing? Gee, what a surprise. We hit an iceberg. I am astonished. I read the report on the Titanic, and I found out that of all of the victims on the Titanic, they got paid $600,000, but the owners of the Titanic got paid $5.5 million. They had four of those ships. Two of them were out there. They were all running half full, and the Titanic, when it sank, only had half a load on it. I think the Titanic was deliberately sunk. I think they knew just exactly what they were doing, did it on purpose. They staged an accident, kind of like the Twin Towers there in New York. They just suddenly came under attack and we're just totally surprised. We just can't figure out what happened last week. That was a $1 trillion hit. Now that would submerge the American economy. That $1 trillion right there did it. That wasn't the only thing. There were other problems before that. Let me show you how valuable the American dollar is. This is a report from Kitco dated 12/19. Now, that's only a couple of days old. As I make this program here, let's see, this is Monday. This is Monday, December the 20th. Listen to this. Got this off the wire yesterday. Even hijackers shun dollars. That's the headline. Even hijackers shun dollars. It was reported that in Greece on Wednesday, two armed men hijacked a bus, threatening to blow it up with explosives unless their demands were met. One of which being a ransom payment of 1 million euros. Obviously, the actions of these hijackers are deplorable, but it demonstrates just how great the disdain is for the United States dollar. You know, time was when they wanted $1 million. Now they're sitting there saying, we don't want $1 million, we want 1 million euros. Even the hijackers, for crying out loud, don't want dollars. Now, I've been reporting to you from the privateer. Let me give the privateer a plug here. I don't want you to think that I'm selling the privateer because I make a profit off of it. I'm a reporter. I don't get anything from the privateer. In fact, I wrote the privateer and told them, send me the privateer so that I can put it on the air from time to time. And they never responded. So I think that they're probably not ecstatic about me sharing the information in the privateer. I recommend that you buy, that you subscribe. I think that it's valuable, but it's not that I'm getting something from it. The publisher is William A.M. Buckler. His address is Post Office Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. Kind of an odd address to us Yanks, but that's what it is. P.O. Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567. Then comes Australia. They've got a webpage. It's www.the-privateer.com. There's a hyphen between the and privateer. www.the-privateer.com. Their email address is CAPT. At the-privateer.com. $180 a year Australian. I don't know how much that is in American. Why don't you get on the email and send them a letter and say, hey, I'd like to get in on the privateer. I'm going to give you the global report. And then we'll take a look at some cause and effect from Bible prophecy. He says, over the week ending on December the 3rd and into the beginning of the week ending on December the 10th, official sources from all over the world, Japan, China, Russia, Indonesia, the European Union, the ECB, the European Central Bank, they sent out a public chorus of official statements to the effect that the United States was risking global capital flight out of the U.S. dollar due to their benign neglect of the U.S. twin budget and trade current account deficits. On Friday, December the 3rd, the U.S. index fell 0.99 points to 80.98, its lowest level yet in its post-January 2002 bear market. Now it's down to 81 cents. It dropped a full penny. Now a penny is one percentage point. In fact, as the dollar gets lower, measured against where it was at 101 here, you know, a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, the percentage of 0.99 grows more than 1% over what it had been. I just point that out because as the dollar declines, the only logical thing for us to do is to get the hell out of the dollar. So if you've got $30,000 in the bank, it's losing value every day. So Americans aren't as dumb, you know, as these economists tend to think we are. When the savings rate in the United States has dropped to 0.5% of your disposable income, Americans aren't dumb. They can see that the money isn't worth anything. So they're getting rid of it. I'm not saving any dollars. I have a savings plan, but it's not in dollars, I'll guarantee you that. I think you should save 50% of everything you create and produce. I learned that from an old Portuguese immigrant came to the United States. I think that if you make a dollar, you should save 50 cents of it and live like you were making just half as much money. Well, Frank told me, he said, it doesn't make any difference how much money you make, you spend it all. If you're making $50,000 a year, you spend it all and probably try to live like somebody making 60. If you're making 60,000, you spend it all. Try to live like somebody making 70 and on up the line it goes. You know, there are people out there that are making 25,000 a year, 15,000 a year. So if you're making 30, you live like the guy that's making 15, you save 15, and before long, 2 or 3 years, you got $15,000, $35,000. Now with some money in your jeans, you can go out and make money. I get letters here all the time. People want to know, well, how do you invest money or what should I invest in? I'm not an investment counselor. I'm not here to tell you what to invest your money in. I teach a school on business. If you want to learn business, I'll teach you how to fish, and then you go out and invest your own money, your own way. I've got a problem investing my money and my resources. How in the hell can I tell you what's good for you? I hardly know what's good for me, much less knowing what's good for you. When somebody asks me for advice, what they're really in effect saying is, I'm dissatisfied with my guardian and I'm looking for a new guardian to tell me how to live my life. Don't you think that you should get to a point in your life where you can decide for yourself what's good for you? That you can decide for yourself what you should be investing in? That you should decide for yourself what you should do next, what the next move ought to be? Now, I don't want to be hypercritical here, but you know, reality is, you have to take care of yourself, and if you can't take care of yourself, you can rest assured that whoever it is that you think is taking care of you is taking care of himself first off of your assets. You can rest assured that that's the case. Well, now in the global market report, they go on to tell us the very lowest point reached by the U.S. index at the bottom of its previous bear market was 80.14, That was intraday low spot future basis hit on April 19th, 1995. The intraday low spot future basis hit on December 3rd, 2004, the day when the U.S. index fell 0.99 points, was 80.96. An equivalent fall on the following Monday, or indeed over the following week ending on December the 10th, would have put the U.S. index below its previous bear market bottom set in 1995. Now, in our current December 10th edition of Gold This Week, our major weekly gold report online, we state that according to Dr. Richard Apple, who has data going back to 1972, the U.S. index has challenged the 80 level a few times over the past three-plus decades, but has only breached it very briefly once. This fact makes the 80 level on the U.S. dollar index the most important support level, without a close contender, in all world markets. By December the 3rd, the cascading fall of the U.S. index, which had been going in an almost unbroken line since November the 3rd, the day after the U.S. election, had fallen dangerously close to this support level. My common sense says that if you're invested in dollars, let's say you got a house and it's worth $300,000. Well, when this money collapse occurs, what's your house going to be worth then? What's the purchasing power today? 300,000 loaves of hillbilly bread. Well, if it drops in value to 150,000, or the purchasing power drops in half, then you've only got 150,000 loaves of hillbilly bread and on down the line. Well, you know, we're not talking rocket science here, boys and girls. We're just talking day in and day out street economics, aren't we? You know, what am I going to get out of this? Now, you've already put out your labor. You already made your payments. You paid the interest. Now that you've made the payments and you own this house, or you've got this equitable interest in the house, you're watching it evaporate before your very eyeballs. My common sense says now's the time to sell. Pass the old maid on to some other fool, and you take the money, put it into gold, sit back and wait until the market collapses, and then come back in and buy. Buy low, sell high. Can you repeat that after me, boys and girls? Buy low, sell high. Buy low, sell high. Can you do that? All right, everybody buys high and sells low. Now, that's the normal way for people to invest. Let's do a little different. Buy low, sell high. Today, your house is as high as it's going to get. Now's the time to sell your house, convert to gold. Can't hold it in dollars. Many people are holding it in euros. Wait a minute. What's the euro backed by? Isn't the euro a fiat currency? How about the Japanese yen? Isn't that a fiat currency? Listen, boys and girls, all the governments of the world rely on their own fiat currencies. If the American dollar is collapsing, what makes you think that any of these other fiat currencies are going to be any better? I think I'll bet on 5,000 years of human history and stash mine in gold and silver coin. All right. So much for the story on the global world financial market. Now, there's one last finger in the dike. As already stated, the 80 level on the U.S. dollar index is the most important support point in the financial world. Since 1972, the year after President Nixon divorced the U.S. dollar completely from gold. It was Richard Nixon now that divorced us from the Bretton Woods Agreement of 1944. All of the world's currencies are now fiat currencies. The year before the inevitable result of that action, the floating of all world currencies, took place, the U.S. index, the dollar index, was only once dropped below that level, and then only very briefly. Now, that means that any sustained drop by the U.S. index below the 80 support level would mean that the world's key reserve currency had fallen below its fiat money era floor, and any concerted drop below 80 on the U.S. index would be the death knell of the U.S. dollar reserve currency status. And the longer it stays below that level, the quicker the recognition of that fact would become impossible to ignore. Now, the big money people, you know, like Buffett and the Saudis, the people that have billions of dollars have been exiting the dollar now for the past 3 years. Do they know something that you and I, the Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives, ought to know? I would contend that they do. Now, you take a look at the numbers that I've been reporting to you, along with the Figge report, the Grace Commission report that we had clear back in 1982, and you put these numbers together and it tells you a pretty sobering story, doesn't it? That the Alice in Wonderland Pied Piper crap that we've been hearing out of Washington, out of our Congress, and out of our CNN news is just that. It's just so much crap. Reality is about to strike, and the rubber's about to meet the road. The biggest U.S. bull market of the post-March 1973 floating currency era took place between mid to late 1980 and March 1985. The impetus for that bull market was the decision made by the Fed in late 1979 to stop targeting interest rates and start targeting money quantities. In other words, the Federal Reserve stood aside and let U.S. interest rates rise to a level which reflected the risk of holding U.S. dollars and compensated U.S. dollar holders, foreign and domestic, for those risks. Remember 1979 and 80 when interest rates hit 21%? The result was U.S. interest rates, which exceeded 20% for a large part of 1981. That's when gold hit $800 an ounce, silver hit $50 an ounce. The result of that was that the rest of the world was lured back out of gold, out of silver, out of Swiss francs, and back into the dollar. When U.S. stock markets took off in late 1982, the flood into dollars became a cascade. The U.S. bull market peaked in March 1985, an event which matched a very important development in March of 1985. For the first time since World War I, the U.S. became a net foreign debtor nation. Started in 1985, the debt. We are now a net debt debtor nation. The U.S. bull market peaked in March of 85, an event which matched a very important development in March of 85, for the first time since World War I. That's where we're at. Debt, netter, debt, a net, I should say, debtor nation. Now, since the U.S. became a net debtor nation, the United States has suffered three bear markets from early 85 to the end of 87, then from late 93 to April of 95, and from January 2000 to date. The recessions and bear markets are coming closer together, 87, 93, 2000, about every 6 or 7 years. Well, we've had three since 87, in 15 years. Now, in late 1999, as U.S. stock markets were nearing their peak, a warning went out that U.S. net external debt had risen from $1.2 to $1.6 trillion. A projection was made which stated that at the present level of increase, the U.S. net external debt would reach $3.8 trillion by the end of 2005. Now, U.S. dollar weakness in the 1970s came when the U.S. was a substantial net creditor nation. In the decade between 85 to 95, the U.S. net external debt was insignificant. Now it's approaching half of the total U.S. gross domestic product. You should note that in the global report in this issue, the U.S. net external debt is reported at $4.25 trillion as of June 30, 2004. That is, the end of the second quarter. The figures for the third quarter have only just been released, and since the end of the last U.S. bear market, the United States has become by far the biggest net foreign debtor in the history of the world. Now, these numbers don't give us anything to be cheering about. We're the largest debtor nation in the history of the world. Our dollar is declining precipitously. Our federal budget is out of balance by $500 billion a year. And remember, the Figge report said, hey, listen, tax policy is not going to make any corrections once it gets to $500 billion a year. And that's the official admitted amount. And they lie to us constantly. The real number is more like $1 trillion a year. This thing is so far out of kilter today that it's not manageable and it's not salvageable. We've already passed the point of no return. It's kind of like flying an airplane. You know, you take off from Vancouver, you're flying up to Watson Lake. Well, by the time you pass over Prince George and you get about halfway up the trench, you look down at the gas gauge and it's already below half. It's called the point of no return. There's not enough gas to get back to Prince George, so you're either going to make it to Watson Lake or you're going to crash. And that's where we're at. The present administration is betting that the rest of the world's going to blink like they did in 1975. I don't know. I hope they do. I hope the rest of the world blinks and they keep on working for us. And they don't expect to get paid because they're not going to get paid. And if they'll continue doing that, well, then that's great for our guys and that's great for us. And if they don't do that, it's going to be bad for us and it's going to be bad for them too. And that's why they've been supporting the dollar. They all know, everybody in the world knows, that when America collapses, the rest of the world goes right with them. Now, why is it that we're headed toward a world economic collapse? Why now? How come it didn't happen in 1995? And why isn't the Bush administration doing something really radical and different? Why don't they come out and say, look, we're in deep doo-doo and we got to make some big changes and we got to make them right now. And here's what I'm proposing. Here's what we're going to do. It seemed like to me, on a scale of 1 to 10, George Bush's flying record, and whether he was present in Alabama at his post or not, on a scale of 1 to 10, compared with the economic collapse of the world on a scale of 1 to 10, don't you think that this is about a 10 and that George Bush's appearance at the National Guard would rank about less than half of 1? Yet during the last election, I never heard anybody talking about the budget deficits or the economy. They're talking about crap like Kerry's Vietnam record or Bush wasn't present in Alabama. He's working on some campaign. The meaty issues, the things that need to be talked about, hammered out. Social Security, well, you got to give Bush credit for this. Everybody recognizes that there's a problem with Social Security. It's a chain letter Ponzi scheme, and now they're going to try to salvage it. How in the hell do you salvage a Ponzi scheme, for crying out loud? Don't you admit that we got a Ponzi scheme? Stop the foolishness and start over at square one on a sound economic basis. You know, look, boys and girls, when you're taking in $2 and spending $3, doesn't your common sense say that we've got to get to a point where we're taking in $3 and spending $2? Or at least we got to get to the point where we're taking in $3 and spending no more than $3. Now, we haven't been doing that since 1932, so it's time that my common sense says that we get our feet on the ground. And if the nation isn't going to do something intelligent, then don't you think that you and I, down here at the family level, ought to do something more intelligent? I want you to write for my free CD package, and let me start you on the road to starting to think more intelligently about you and your family. And what are you going to do when this hyperinflation sets in, stagflation or deflation, or maybe a combination of all three? Let me give you a little warning here. The opinions, the beliefs, the comments, and the views, you know, the radio stations, they listen to this and they say, my God, this guy's a raving lunatic. We can't have people like this on the air. So I have to tell you that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org or call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967. georgegordon.org is the website. When you get to the website, you can click on to the email address. It's 32 characters long, that's why I don't want to give it to you. Just click on to it and it'll do it automatically. Or you can just call direct, 417-273-4967, and ask for that free general law CD package. And if you want to do a little business, I teach a business school. Just ask about our business school and our schedule. And let's see if we can't get you out of debt and up to zero COD and start putting some real wealth in your pockets. Now, I wanted to share with you a couple of Bible prophecies here. In Revelation chapter 13, there's a chapter here that deals with a coming economic colossus, a coming world geopolitical colossus that's going to bring upon us, that's you and me, Joe Sixpack down here, Sally Housewife, a world war, a gigantic world war, a war that the Messiah, you know, Jesus of Nazareth, the guy you know that everybody goes to church and prays to and does all this good stuff with, well, he had a couple of observations. You can read about that in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21, three chapters. Those three chapters correlate with Deuteronomy 28, Leviticus 26, and the book of Revelation, having to do with the future. And his disciples came to him one day, and this is recorded now in Matthew chapter 24, came to him one day and they said, hey, boss, tell us what it's going to be like at the end of the world and at your second coming. Can you tell us what that's going to be like? And he said, all right, boys and girls, gather around, sit down, let me tell you a story. And he told them a story. And the story he told them, he said, here's what you can expect. And it's enough to curl your hair. It's something that you don't hear in church because it's not pleasant to contemplate. We want to talk about Christmas and Jesus, you know, asleep in the manger and Mary, you know, and Joseph and camels and wise men. We want to talk about fairy tales. We want to talk about reality. We don't want to know what's going on in the world of finance and international geopolitical economics. That's heavy-duty stuff. That's for PhDs and people with letters after their names. We don't want to think about that. Let's let the captain run the Titanic, and let's let the captain and crew do for us what's good for us. Unfortunately, when you're sitting back waiting for your guardian to do what's good for you, he's doing what's good for him first, at your expense. Well, here in chapter 13 of Revelation, there's a story here. Listen to this. In verse 16, it says, and he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. This isn't just poor guys down here at the bottom. It's not just slaves. It's rich and poor. It crosses all social stratas. Everybody's going to have this mark. And if you don't have this mark, no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. You're not going to be able to buy, sell, or trade. You won't be able to work without this mark, whatever this mark is. I think it's Social Security. Everybody in the world's got a Social Security number issued by their governments. That's why Vietnamese can come over here to the United States with their Social Security number and draw benefits. That's why the United States is recognizing the social security numbers of illegal immigrants coming into the United States. Yeah, that's right. They recognize that so that these immigrants, when they go back to Mexico, can draw their social security benefits off of their earnings that they made here in the United States while they were here as illegal immigrants. Did you know that? That's what I said. You know, they're feeding off of you whether you like it or not. So let's pay attention, because I'm not sure that our government is working in your best interest or mine. Now, chapter 13 here is talking about some beast power, talking about some international geopolitical force, like the United States of Europe is kind of where I'm thinking, or China, or some big international organization. And I think the United Nations fits right in here. And they're going to give us a new currency. We're going to have new money. The world's economic system, the bankers, the international bankers, they don't like the world's economic system. They're in control of it. They want to change it. They've been changing it over a long period of time. They took us off of gold. They took us off of silver. They gave us fiat currency. They didn't like gold. They didn't like silver. And they don't like fiat currency either. They want a total control mechanism. And here's the way this thing's going to come down. You're going to go to work for your company. And at the end of the week, they're going to make a direct deposit into your bank account. To access that, you're going to have a chip in your right hand and in your forehead. I imagine a lot of people are going to have their hands cut off and their heads cut off and their chips stolen. I think that'll be the new crime wave of the future. But for right now, it's just identity theft. They're stealing your credit cards and they're stealing your identity. And to solve that problem, they're going to put this identity, they're going to embed it right into your body. And it'll also give the world national identification. Now, God comes along and says, if you have this mark of the beast, he says, I'm going to kill you. And if you don't have this mark of the beast says you're going to starve to death. So you can make up your mind. God will kill you or you'll starve to death. How's that for a choice to make? You're going to have the red death pill or you're going to have the green death pill. What do you want to choose? Well, why don't we think about the white life pill? A third choice, a wild new concept. Now, this mark of the beast, that we see here in Revelation 13 is described for us over here in Matthew 24. So let's flip over here to Matthew 24. And the Messiah, when he was asked this question, let's just read through some of it over here. It's kind of interesting reading if you stop and think about it. It was a bright sunny day, and Jesus went out, and he departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him to show him the temples or the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, "See you not all of these things? Surely I say to you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down." Now, the last time I looked at that wailing wall over in Jerusalem, that's the second temple. That's the temple that was there when Jesus was there, the temple that was knocked down by Titus in 70 AD. Here's Jesus. He comes along and he says, "Hey, listen, boys and girls, look at that temple over there. Pretty impressive monument, wouldn't you say?" He said, "Not one stone." Listen to this again. It's in verse 2. He said, "There shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down." Now, there's a whole bunch of stones over there that haven't been thrown down yet. Now, I'm not a theologian, and I haven't been to seminary, but my common sense says that if that statement's true, accurate, and correct, Jesus ain't coming back this week or next. He ain't coming back until every one of those stones is knocked out. Now, there's some work afoot over there in Israel. There's a group of people over there, a pretty sizable group, that want to rebuild that temple. And they want to build it right there on that Temple Mountain. They've got a bunch of Arabs over there that are just dead set against it. In fact, that's what all this controversy is about, is over that Temple Mount. That's what we're really talking about. Yasser Arafat wanted to make Jerusalem the capital of this Palestinian state. And the Jews are sitting over there saying, "No way in God's green earth are we going to sit still for that." So now they come up with a new idea. They got to come up with a two-state solution to this problem. Now, in Bible prophecy, God says everybody that messes with Jerusalem is going to get their fingers burned. Have you been watching this for the last 50 years? Can you point to one country? Can you point to anybody that's tried to involve themselves with this Arab-Israeli conflict that hasn't gotten burned or disappointed? In verse 3, he goes on, he gives us a little bit more of the picture. He says, "He sat on the Mount of Olives, his disciples came to him privately, and they said, 'Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of your coming and of the end of the world, the end of the age? Tell us what it's going to be like, boss, when you come back.'" So they knew about resurrections. They knew about the second coming. And they said, "Well, tell us what it's going to be like." So he said, "Okay, let me explain." Verse 4, he said, "Take heed that no man deceive you." Evidently, he thought there was going to be some deception going on out here. "For many shall come in my name, saying, 'I am Christ,' and shall deceive many." And people are running around the world today preaching Jesus and him crucified, aren't they? 476 churches here in America, all preaching about Jesus and him crucified. And he says, "Take heed that no man deceive you." Why? Many are going to come in my name, preaching about me, telling you stories about me, and they're lying deceivers. Gee, it makes you kind of wonder about Billy Graham and Oral Roberts and Jerry Falwell, doesn't it? And he said, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, but be not troubled, for all of these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet." Now, in the 20th century, we've had a lot of wars, killed a lot of people. He said, don't let that bother you. That's just the beginning of sorrows. The end isn't yet. When you see all these wars going on, that's not the big ending yet. He says, "All of these, though, are the beginning of sorrows. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you. And you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake." So that doesn't bode very well for the followers of the Messiah, does it? He says, "You're going to be hated of all nations. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and they shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall arise, and shall deceive many." Many false prophets are going to arise and deceive many. Woo! Did you hear that? Many false prophets. How do you know what a false prophet looks like? Are they wearing turbans and long flowing robes? Are they dressed in pinstripes and carrying attaché cases? What does a false prophet look like anyway? How would you recognize one of them? Would you see one maybe on a Sunday morning in church? Well, you know, whatever they look like, wherever they're located, there's going to be a bunch of them out there. And he said, you need to be wary of these false prophets. "And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold." Iniquity, lawlessness, criminal behavior shall abound. "But he that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness to all nations, and then shall the end come." I forgot to tell you, over here in Revelation 11, there's a story about two witnesses. You got two witnesses that come in the power of Elijah. I don't know who these two guys are. One of them may be a woman. Both of them may be women. I don't know. I haven't seen or heard them yet. Have you? But they're coming. And one of these days, when they come, they're going to have a message. And they're going to be killed. There's going to be some big events transpiring. You can take a look at that for yourself. That's Revelation chapter 11, these two witnesses. I haven't seen anything like these two witnesses marauding around on planet Earth and shutting up the rain for 3.5 years. Not yet. It's coming. He said it is. I mean, you know, if you can believe this guy. I mean, most people don't believe Jesus of Nazareth. They think he was a damn liar. Or he didn't know what he was talking about. He was either a fool that didn't know what he was talking about or a damn liar, one of the other. He went on to say in verse 15, "When you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place." Abomination of desolation standing in the holy place. See that temple that I mentioned to you a little earlier? There's a bunch of people over in Palestine that are going to build a temple over there, and there's going to be an abomination of Daniel, an abomination of desolation that was spoken of by Daniel the prophet. And so he said, now when you see that abomination of desolation standing in that holy place, after you see every stone in that building right over there thrown to the ground, which hasn't happened yet. There's still some stones in that wailing wall, in the foundation. So now when you see that happen, have we seen that happen yet? Well, I haven't. It hasn't occurred yet. Then let him which be in Judea flee to the mountains, and let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. Woe to them that are with child and to them that are giving suck in those days. You pregnant women over there might want to reconsider pregnancy. Well, I didn't write that. I'm just telling you that's what the boss said. He said, you know, woe be unto those that are with, you know, you got little children and you got nursing babies over here. This is not the time when you want to be having babies. But pray that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall be great tribulation such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be again. Evidently, this is going to be worse than Noah's flood, when only 8 people survived. Now, there's going to be more survivals, but he said, or survivors, but he says this is going to be a real shocker. This is going to be a tough time. How tough is it going to be? How tough is the great tribulation going to be? He said, there's never been a time like it from the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be again. You know, if you could survive through this great tribulation, you know, you could come back to your class reunion 30,000 years from now and say, well, I lived through the Great Tribulation. Geez, where were you located? Well, I was in North Dakota when the world system collapsed. Well, I was in New York. I was in London. I was in Scotland. I was in South Africa. Well, it's going to happen to somebody at some time, at some point in time. Of course, when I was a kid, they used to joke about the second coming of Christ. You know, they used to say it was slower than the second coming of Christ. It used to be molasses in January. That's pretty slow, too. He goes on to say here, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. So there's a time of war, of catastrophe. Let's take a look at where we are international geopolitic-wise. Did you notice that the Chinese economy is growing by 7% a year, compounded? I mean, that is phenomenal. 7%? Let's take our rule of 72 divided by 7. The Chinese economy is doubling every 10 years. Doubling every 10 years. You got 1 billion people over there in China. That's a bunch. And they're starting to use more of the world's natural resources. And by the time that China, 4 times, 5 times bigger than the United States, I mean, they got about $1.3 billion. And the United States has about 275 million. I mean, just picture this, you know, 250, 5, 750, 10. You know, they're about 5 times bigger than we are, about 5 times more of them than we are. Can you imagine what the world's going to be like when those Chinese over there are consuming as much oil as we are? How long do you think that oil supply is going to last then? Or when they're consuming as much steel as we do, and so on? Or do you think maybe we might be fighting over that oil in the Middle East, the dwindling means of survival? Do you suppose that might be the trigger that causes the great battle of Armageddon, fighting over that oil? Well, right now today, the United States is over in Iraq. Iraq has 25% of the world's known oil reserves, and we're over there securing those oil reserves. We've got the Saudi Arabians in our back pocket, and Qatar, and the only one over there that's not in our back pocket is Iran. Yeah, just the Iranians. Then there's a few other countries around the world. You know, the United States, the world's number one superpower, has just about everything in the world locked up. And we're coming to a crisis. Our monetary system is on the verge of collapse. That'll drag down the world's monetary system and usher in this new world order, this grand plan, the grand plan spoken of by the protocols or in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. Looks like some pretty big times are right on the horizon, wouldn't you say, boys and girls? Well, at least that's what Bible prophecy is telling us. Anyway, just pick it up and read it for yourself. I didn't write this. Don't get mad at me. I didn't say this. I wasn't smart enough to think this up. Now, there's another factor that comes into play here. Did you ever stop to think about Bible prophecy? Is it a good guess? Kind of like I'm sitting here today saying, well, what do you think is going to happen to the economy in the year 2005, 6, or 7, based upon the numbers that I've been giving you? Well, the Figgy people in the Grace Commission says, well, here's what's going to happen. And they picked 1995, and they said, well, we'll be in hyperinflation by 1995. Well, we're not in hyperinflation by 1995. We're not in hyperinflation as of 2004. Inflation's only about 6%. However, hyperinflation sets in 3 days. So historically, we've seen what happened to other countries, and we saw where their economies were. We saw what their gross domestic products were and the percentages of debt that they were carrying, and then what happened next. And the United States has surpassed all of those projections. Ladies and gentlemen, we stand head and shoulders above every nation, city-state, or empire in the world, in everything, including debt, debauchery, and every perverse action or activity you can imagine. Now, how long can the American Empire exist, continue on? Well, the Roman Empire came to an end. So did the Egyptians and the Babylonians and Hitler's Third Reich. You know, they come and they go, don't they? You take a look at a map of 1600 and compare that with a map of 1700, 1800, 1900, and you'll notice that there's an evolution. Countries come and countries go. They disappear. The great Spanish Empire collapsed and fell apart, didn't it? Where's Spain today? Little country over there in Europe. and all of their great possessions and their great wealth dissipated. What about the great British Empire? When I was a boy, the sun never set on the British Empire. The sun rises and sets on the British Empire every day, doesn't it? Yep, they're pretty transitory. They're here today and they're gone tomorrow. That's the bottom line. And the Messiah said in verse 25, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. Now, evidently, he believed his own story. He evidently believed what he was telling these people, because he said, heaven and earth will pass away before my words do. You can bank on what I'm telling you. Now, here's the way this is coming down. Now, here's the chapters that you need to put together. Let me give you the list. Write these down, and you go read these chapters and see if they don't tell you the same story. It's Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. Those three chapters, along with Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Then take a look at Revelation chapter 6, chapter 11, 17, 18, and 20. Revelation chapter 6, 11, 17, 18, and 20. Put those together. Now, that's the Olivet prophecy. That's the code. And it'll tell you a story. And that story is something different than you've been listening to about Jesus asleep in the manger with his Virgin Mother Mary and Joseph and a bunch of wise men. It's a story of international geopolitics. It's a story of world history. And here's where we're going from here. Remember, his disciples asked the question, just like we do today. What is the end of all of this? And it has to be somebody that's got the power to actually bring it to pass. And this guy says, I can make it happen. And that's what we're watching today. And that's the meaning behind the Figge report and the Grace Commission report. Bible prophecy. We're watching it unfold today. And I'm about out of time. Now, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page at the website, georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just go to the website, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, schedule of archives. It can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Well, there's a signal that says my time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Thanks for listening, and until then, good night, friends.